If your small business has a problem, you could say,
"Ugh, just my luck."
But you should say,
"Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there."
And we'll help get you back in business. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Coffee and Football, presented by Rick Bobro and Austin Underground. I'm your host, Blake Monroe, where I'm joined each and every morning by Bobby Burton and Jerry Hamilton. A lot to talk about this morning. Tell us where you're checking in from, what you're drinking, get your questions in. And guys, we'll just go with what we talked about at the beginning of every show this week, the transfer portal. Today, maybe decision day, it sounds like. Jerry, what's the latest there?
I mean, maybe, right? Last night I had heard him. It could be as early as noon. Dominic, he left a visit from LSU yesterday around 2:30, got back to Fort Worth, did meet with Texas last night. Now his people are in Oklahoma City, meeting with Oklahoma this morning. So that's the new one, because I didn't hear he had met with Oklahoma last night, but they're meeting with Oklahoma today. Now, I don't know if that's Dominic or just the circle. Is meeting with Oklahoma this morning, 10, 11-ish in that area code. But we'll see what happens, man. This is Bobby. This is what it's coming down to here. I think, look, I don't think it's going to be LSU. I think it's going to be Oklahoma or Texas. I think that's where this is headed. I think the kid really likes LSU. He had a great visit to LSU. I don't think they're in the sandbox with Texas and OU on this one, though. And it has nothing to do with recruiting.
Having spoken to someone last night, I would agree with you separately, Jerry. And I think that we'll find out later today, one way or the other. And obviously, he's a key recruit for the University of Texas. Kenny Baker has put a lot of effort into it, as other members of the staff, whether it's Brandon Harris or Steve Sarkisian himself. Texas trying to go all in for Dominic Williams. Obviously, it's coming down to the 11th hour if his representatives are in Oklahoma City today. So we'll see how that plays out. Very interesting to me. Some other portal news. Jerry, you mentioned yesterday in a message that Simeon Barrow, the defensive lineman out of Michigan State, now looks like he's off the board. Texas was giving him some interest, but it looks like he's going to go ahead and make a decision between Miami and LSU. Also in the portal recruiting, Texas expected Javion Cole, cornerback out of San Jose State, in for a visit later today. Cole, you know what? The more you do research on him, Jerry, the more you like him.
No doubt. I spoke with somebody. I spoke with somebody that is close to one of the San Jose State defensive back coaches, and they San Jose State. Obviously, that head coach is now at Arizona, but. They think that kid's got a pro future. What level that is a pro football, I don't know, but they think he's got a pro future. So that's where that's at. He should be getting into Austin today. Some people are just joining in. Is Texas going to meet with Williams again? No. Texas met with Dominic Williams. I'll reset that. Dominic Williams, TCU transfer. He left LSU around 2:30 or 3 yesterday, got back to Fort Worth, met with Texas last night. Dominic was part of that meeting last night. This morning, his people are in Oklahoma City. Norman, you're going to meet with Oklahoma around 10:30 or 11 and somewhere in that area code. We do not know if Dominic's on that trip. We believe he has a class this morning, so he may not be part of that, but the circle is in Oklahoma City. So we'll see what happens. I think it's coming down to Texas and OU, guys. I just don't think LSU can keep pace from an NIL standpoint on this one, guys. It's going to be Texas or OU unless something dramatic changes.
How big a recruit is this for Texas, in your opinion, Jerry? I mean, given what they've tried to accomplish on the defensive front this offseason, and what we've talked about where that may be the single piece where they're most concerned, even more so than cornerback, even though they just lost a starting corner to the portal.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I mean, he's going to play in the NFL. I think he could be a two contract player in the NFL. Dominic Williams is a very, very, very good player. There's a reason everybody's fighting for him. And I think he's the best available in the portal as well. So the instant impact, I think he's a, difference maker for the team he goes to next year. You know, what it always comes down to, whether it's basketball or football, is the juice worth the squeeze. And that's what these guys have to decide, because it's a lot of juice.
Yep. Hey, there's also the state track and field championships coming up this weekend. RCJ Vogel will be there. Duncanville is going to be well represented. All the speed schools will be at the state track and field today. There's Texas baseball. There's all kinds of stuff coming up this weekend for the Longhorns. Jerry and Blake, the other thing that I would say that was very interesting to me yesterday, the NCAA came out and it looks like they're moving closer and closer to a model where the NCAA will compensate its athletes via revenue share based on some meetings they had yesterday. It also looks like they're trying, and one of the bowl directors came out and said yesterday that he had a conversation with Charlie Baker, the head of the NCAA, and he recounted his conversation thusly. He said that, look, the long-term plan is for NIL to be brought in-house. So no longer are the collectives going to be third party, but they'll be brought in-house. And as part of that will be multiple factors and pieces of NIL, whether it's revenue sharing based on NIL or just NIL generally. That'll be brought in-house. And then furthermore, they're going to make sure that the players then are compensated on the entire season, not just the regular season. So it'll stop some of these bowl opt-outs and last-minute things that have plagued college football, frankly. It's diminished the bowl season as much as the playoff has diminished the bowl season. When you have a team like Florida State that goes undefeated in the regular season, Jerry, and in the ACC championship, and then a dozen guys decide not to play,
and you lose 63-3.
They deserve to be in the Orange Bowl in the first place. So yeah. Hopefully that move of bringing NIL in-house and then having those I don't want to say airtight contracts, because every lawyer would roll their eyes when I said it, right? But having better contracts where players then play the whole season, I think that might actually be a good move forward for college football. Everybody wants, in my opinion, everybody wants to see players play through their bowl game. Opting out is the smart move to do. I mean, nobody would say Bijan Robinson needed another game to prove himself against Washington, right? Okay. Yeah. But I think it helps college football if, when their teams are on the highest display in late December, the best players are playing, regardless of whether it's a nondescript bowl game or college football play.
Hey, Bobby, are we headed to it's different because there's private schools, public schools, but are we headed to the athletes being employees of the state where they go to college?
Very possible. I think it may end up depending on the state.
Yeah.
And whether or not you have a private institution or a public one.
I mean, the game changer. That's the game changer in all this to me.
Well, it is, because then you get long-term health insurance. I mean, you get a lot of different pieces with it, right? That could, you know, I don't know all of what's going to happen. I know the move potentially to Texas or to any team bringing NIL in-house is very positive overall. So that's my general feeling, whether it's as an employer or not. I'm not as big on that, because I think that has more tax implications for the state of Texas or for players in the state, what have you. I don't think it necessarily matters from a everybody playing one another. You know, more of that. The idea here is, let's get the kids on the field and let's create a better product. It sounds like that's the way they're trying to push this, which I applaud, actually.
All right, guys, we got some high school recruiting to talk about as well. But before we get to that, Bobby, I'm going to let you tell folks out there about Rick Vavro and Austin Underground.
Yeah, absolutely. One of our favorite advertisers and sponsors is Rick Vavro of Austin Underground. Since 2004, Austin Underground has specialized in difficult underground commercial installations. The team's engineering background gives Austin Underground The ability to perform work other firms often consider just too risky. Rick and his team offer an end-to-end client experience, including seamless communication, budgeting, staffing, and top-notch trade partners. And most importantly, they produce solid quality work each and every time. That's Austin Underground. Also, check out TexasRoad.com. Rick and his team also will do above-ground work for subdivisions, large projects, anything like that that you're contemplating if you're own a business or a big house, want some stuff done, look up Rick Vavro at either Austin Underground or Texas Road.
All right, as I said, guys, we got to talk a little high school recruiting. A bunch of 2026 offers went out yesterday. Of course, the coach is also on the road, Jerry. Looks like you may be on the road too there. But what's the latest with recruiting?
Yeah, I've got a thread on texasfootball.com that will document the road trip, which has already begun. I'm east of Louisiana, guys, and I'll be for a few days here. So I think the Texas coaches are on the road. I talked to James Simon, the running back from Calvary Baptist in Shreveport last night. Tashard Choice was at his practice for part of that practice yesterday. The only official visit James Simon has scheduled right now is Texas, June 21st through 23rd. We'll see if he backs off his June timeline there. That's of note what James Simon's timeline is. He spoke with CJ Vogel and I after the Texas spring game and said a May decision was on the table. We'll see if that remains the case. I think that's definitely in play. Kyle Flood, I caught up with somebody in Roswell yesterday. Kyle Flood was by a fellowship school to see Josh Petty, the four-star offensive lineman, on Tuesday. Texas is trying to get him in June 14th through 16th. And then we talked about this with Josh Petty, very talented offensive lineman and runner-up in wrestling, I think 3 years in a row in his weight class in the state of Georgia. But, you know, he has a full visit slate scheduled right now. But if Texas and him are going to move forward, June 14th through 16th date will have to happen. He currently has Oregon there. I'm not sure if Oregon sticks there, if he flips that to Texas for the official visit. That's in play. We'll see what the family decides there. Obviously, there's some family connections in San Angelo, Big Lake area, and the Petty family. And I don't think Oregon's ultimately where the kid's going to go. So it'll be interesting to see if that visit date flips from Oregon to Texas. I think we'll know something on that this weekend. The Texas staff's going to be out in California, a lot of places today. In Modern Day, Texas is scheduled to be out at Modern Day. Johnny Nansen's been on the West Coast. He was in Vegas. I think him and Kenny Baker are scheduled to be by Folsom to see Josiah Sharma at some point today. So the Texas staff's out and about. A lot of guys are – 3-4 guys are out in California right now seeing some of those top targets, whether that's Marco Jones at San Ramon, whether that's Josiah Sharma, Hayden Lowe at Oaks Christian, and Matea, the linebacker committed to USC at San Clemente. Texas is out of state this week. They're really going to be more focused next week on Houston, Dallas. I know Johnny Nance is scheduled to be Elijah Barnes practice May 8th next week. And I know Blake Gideon, some of those guys, Chris Jackson are scheduled to be in Houston next week as well, seeing guys, Jonah Williams, Kelshawn Johnson, some of those guys. So a lot going on. We broke the news last couple of days that Kevin Wynn, the defensive lineman from Greensboro, Greene County, the four-star D lineman, 6'2", 320, plays over the ball. He's added a Texas official visit June 14th through 16th. It looks like Texas has replaced Alabama in that top four, which is Florida State, South Carolina, Texas, and Georgia. He'll visit all those in June. So Texas staff out and about. Like you said, they offered some 26s, but they're really out and about seeing these top 25 targets and also seeing some 26 prospects. They're evaluating some of those kids getting offers as they set up, trying to get the kids to the elite camp June 1st. And then the other second elite camp is June 13th. That's normally more the OLDL elite camp. That June 1st camp is the big, big elite camp of some of the very top targets in 2026. Somebody's continues to ask. There's a lot going on here with Dominic Williamson. We have a lot of people joining us, so I'm going to continue to update that. He got back from LSU around 2:30 or 3 yesterday. And then he returned back to Fort Worth. He met with Texas last night for a couple hours there. This morning, his people are in Oklahoma City meeting with Oklahoma. We don't know if Dom Williams is part of that. I think he's got class today, but he could be part of that. We don't know. But I really think it's going to come down to Texas and Oklahoma, barring a big change. I don't think LSU can keep pace in the NIL portion of this recruitment. It would right now it'd be an upset if it was LSU. I think Texas and Oklahoma, from an NIL perspective, have separated themselves in this recruitment. But we'll see what happens.
It's going to be Texas or OU.
Yeah.
It's going to be Texas or OU. And, you know, he met with Texas last night again post-visit. Then he's one of his representatives, at least, is visiting with OU in Norman or Oklahoma City today. And so I think it's going back and forth. So we'll see what exactly happens and where it all comes out. But my point here is really pretty simple. Longhorns need a defensive tackle, one that can play over the ball and push the pocket at the same time. And they need an elite one if they want to be an elite team. And now, does that mean the season's over if Texas doesn't get this guy? Obviously not. I'm not trying to say that. But this is a key recruit for the University of Texas, in my opinion.
Hey, guys, we got a super chat regarding that situation coming from Travis Bingham. Thank you, Travis. He says, how would Williams stack up against Walter Nolan and the Houston defensive tackle that Texas missed out on? And does anybody else feel gross about these recruitments just coming down to the highest bidder?
I think the interesting part is the juice worth the squeeze? And that's what everybody has to decide on these guys. At some point it is, at some point it may not be. I think that's really running rampant in basketball right now. But it's part of it in football as well. I've seen Jamari Caldwell mocked in the first round a couple of places. Look, before the coaching change, he was headed to Texas over Oregon. Then the coaching change happened. He ended up at Oregon. He's a very talented, disruptive player. I think Dominic Williams is a better over the ball type of prospect than Jamari Caldwell. I think Jamari Caldwell is a very good pass rusher disruptor. We'll see what happens. I think Dominic Williams, I've continued to say it. I think he's an NFL player. Is that second round? Is that third round? Is that fourth round? Somewhere in there. Should he be a two contract NFL player? If he does it right, yeah, sure. He's that level player.
Okay. And then a couple of other portal questions that we have, guys. Elaine says, are we off the corner from Arizona? I know, obviously, y'all talked about that a couple days ago, but maybe for those that missed it, can you run down the Tecario Davis recruitment?
Yeah. He withdrew his name, Alan, or Elaine. He withdrew his name from the portal on April 30th. So he's no longer in the portal. So that's where it's at. Tecario Davis out. Texas is going right now after Javion Cole. We know of at least one. There he is, a cornerback out of San Jose State. Some people are asking about D'Angelo Pons. I haven't heard that, but that would be somewhat surprising. He's 5'9", 165. Texas is not necessarily looking for smaller corners at this point. They actually had an issue with Deshaun Jameson being a smaller corner, if you remember that, and he ended up losing his spot. So I'm not my thought right now is that Texas is actually looking – more for a little bit bigger corner that can run. So people are also asking about Cormani McClain out of Colorado. As of right now, Texas, I think, had a preliminary discussion with him, but that didn't go anywhere, at least not yet. So we'll see. I think Javion Cole is the guy right now for Longhorns at defensive back. Jerry, this is a bigger question. Texas is at 81 scholarships right now.
Yeah.
If they were to get Cole and Williams, that would put them at 83. What do you do with the next two scholarships, or is Texas just going to stay pat? That's what I'm wondering. Do they go for another defensive tackle? Do they go for another DB? Do they take a linebacker? And then obviously I think you save one for a punter maybe.
Yeah.
Because if you get both of these guys, what do you do with the next two?
Yeah, I think a second DB is not out of the question right now. We'll see. I mean, Simeon Barra, we kind of went over that, the D lineman from Michigan State. That's going to go to Miami or LSU. I think Miami at the end of the day. I'll be surprised if it's not for the same reasons we're talking about Dominic Williams with Texas and OU and LSU not being able to keep pace. I think it's very similar there. We'll see. I mean, Derek Harmon's out there from Michigan State. You know, there's still some conversations there. as far as another D lineman, but he's pretty much the only guy right now. But it's not out of the question a second DB, not out of the question punter, obviously. So we shall see what happens. But I don't think Texas, is standing pat, even if they get both these guys.
Yeah, I would add this, that Bobby Petronic said could put Bert Auburn on scholarship as well.
Yeah.
So there you go.
A couple of other portal questions. Ivory Martin and a couple of others have asked about the James Madison corner, D'Angelo Pons. Is there anything there with Longhorn?
Yeah, that's the guy I was just talking about. He's 5'9", 165. And so I just don't think that doesn't make sense to me. Now, Texas has reached into James Madison before for player. I don't see that one. Now, maybe I end up being wrong. He is a really good player, but I don't see that one happening.
Can't transfer SEC to SEC on Ethan Pouncey in the spring.
Michael Sproul asking about Florida's corner Pouncey. So, all right, guys, we have another super chat here from Kyle. Thank you, Kyle. He says, hot take. The quarterback play overall will be worse next year in the SEC than last year. That's why I think Sark is not worried about the secondary.
Oh, I think Sark's worried about everything. I don't know. He may be saying one thing publicly like he did yesterday at the Houston Touchdown Club, but he doesn't. You don't kid yourself. He may try to look smooth above the surface like a duck, but underneath the legs are paddling. That's his job, to paddle, you know, and make it look smooth along the way. I think that quarterback play in the SEC could be down. Obviously, Jaden Daniels leaves, but you have Carson Beck as well as Jalen Milroe returning. Graham Mertz is going to have another year starting experience. I'm not so sure about that. Quarterback play other than Jaden Daniels, Jalen Milroe, and Carson Beck, I don't think it was elite at any point in the SEC last year anyways. So I don't think it's going to be down. And quarterback play in the Big 12 last year wasn't, other than Gabriel and Ewers, I don't think it was elite either. So I don't know that that's – I don't think Texas is not unconcerned about its secondary. I think that they have the proper amount of concern compared to some fans out there who think the sky may be falling.
All right, and then two other ones that we have questions on regarding the portal from Colton. Any interest in Ben Roberts, a defensive lineman from Oregon?
I haven't heard that name as of yet.
So I want to say this, too. I mean, I mentioned this. So Johnny Bowens from Oregon went in the portal, too, Jerry. Okay, yeah. Young lineman out of Converse Judson went up to Oregon, originally committed to A&M before switching to Oregon. Unless I'm just wrong, Jerry, I don't think, and I use this term, and I don't want to be derisive when I use it or negative. Texas isn't really looking for sloppy seconds right now.
Yeah.
Ben Roberts had 34 plays last year.
Yeah, that's not what they're looking for.
They're not looking for guys with – they'll go the high school route and bring guys up like Alex January, and they would rather do that. Bet on Sadir Mitchell getting over the top, maybe.
Yeah.
What, by the way, we got to mention that. Yesterday we found out Sadir Mitchell did not enter his name in the portal. Today would be the last day we would hear if a Longhorn put their name in the portal. I have not heard, and I've cross-checked three different ways from Sunday, of any player on the Longhorns that has added their name to the portal on late night April 30th. There's a 48-hour wait period. But as it relates to Ben Roberts or Johnny Bowens or et cetera, Texas not really looking for sloppy seconds. They're looking for guys that have played the game.
Yeah. Yeah. And to Bobby's point, those Johnny Bowens and Ben Roberts combined for three or four tackles last year. Texas wants experienced guys that have played at the Power 5, now Power 4 level, and can come in and make a difference on a team that's going to be ranked top 5 preseason. That's just the bottom line with where they're looking. So we keep getting a lot of questions on Cormani McClain. I would be surprised.
Well, no. I was actually going to do that one next because you're correct. We have had quite a few here. And then, Jerry, maybe you can answer this one for ex-boy Teddy. He says, hook him from Sunset, Utah. Are there any prospects in Utah that I can watch for?
I'll have to do some research on some 26s, but not anything off the top of my head in 25. That doesn't mean Nansen won't go through Salt Lake. I mean, he's recruited that area before, but nothing right now that comes to mind.
Okay, guys. Well, plenty of time to get your questions in right here on Coffee and Football, presented by Rick Valvro and Austin Underground. So please do so. And we'll start here at the top with EQ. Good morning from Rockford, Illinois. Does DFW still dominate the 2026 recruiting landscape in the state of Texas?
I think so. I mean, look, another good season on the field this year. Yes, because Texas has a lot of momentum. They have a lot going for them. I think you're going to start to see, look, the next couple of drafts, you're going to have some DFW guys that wore the Texas uniform getting drafted and are going to be high on mock drafts during the next 2-3 years. So, yeah, I think so. One more good season on the field for Texas, and I think the momentum just continues. A&M's trying to put up a fight in DFW. They understand the new staff that was hired. They understand that they have to do better in DFW right now. That's kind of been something the A&M staff has targeted. Obviously, Oklahoma, that's the Texas and Oklahoma battle in that area. LSU's battling hard up in Duncanville and around I-20. Everybody in the country is. But I think Texas is in the catbird seat right now, and I think they'll continue to be. I think they have a really good staff. They're winning games. The move to the SEC, a lot of guys getting drafted in the future. Names will be called from DFW that played at Texas here coming up. So I think Texas is in the catbird seat.
And then Marco says, are Duncanville and DeSoto still the teams to beat in the DFW area? I guess you could add Alito to that list as well.
Well, Cedar Hill, I mean, that district is just brutal. I mean, we had Coach Coleman on, Jacody Coleman on from Skyline, Elijah Barnes, Texas commitment. Mesquite Horn moved into that district. But, I mean, you know, you had two state champions last year, and Cedar Hill lost in, what, the regional finals? And they were third in the district. So, maybe the hungry man wins, but I Duncanville offensively is going to be potent again this year. I mean, I know Caden Durham's gone, but just look at their track teams and all the speed they have. The young kid Theus running 10-5s, slot receiver. They have so much speed on offense right now. And this year, Duncanville, now we'll see what they do without Simmons in January on the defensive line. But this year, Duncanville will have a little bit of revenge against DeSoto because DeSoto whooped them in district play last year. So there'll be a little revenge factor there as well for Duncanville, but they're going to be really good on offense, guys. I mean, they got big time quarterback, one of the best players in the country, wide out. I mean, they got so much speed. They could make 4x100 relay teams and compete. They just have a lot. They have a lot of guys that can really run right now, but Cedar Hill's got some really good big guys too. So be interesting games. It's going to be a battle.
And we have a super chat from
Boy. Good morning,
from KD35. I am the best, thank you, sir. And he says, "Do you think we will see any surprise portal entrants here in the next 24 hours that Texas would definitely jump on, or think most of the big names have gone in now?"
I think if we hear anybody today, it would be a little that's a big name player. It would be a little surprising because we haven't usually get word of some rumblings behind the scenes about these guys. Think about it 2 years ago when Xavier Worthy kind of toyed with going into the portal, right? We actually heard about that. People knew about it across the country a little bit after that. If you're hearing of or thinking of a big name player like one of the Michigan defensive tackles or its cornerback or, you know, any other major college player, you typically would have heard news of that by now. So I don't think there's going to be one. Doesn't mean we couldn't miss. Yeah. And some guy, I mean, frankly, some guy from Toledo that we're unaware of jumps in that ends up being a first round pick like Quinyon Mitchell. I mean, who knows, right? But we don't expect it, I think, is a fair assessment.
And Jared Johnson wants to know, when is the next portal opening? I know there is a winter opening now, obviously a spring, but when does it open again?
Well, here's the reality. You can't transfer again. You can transfer at any time now, but you can't transfer and be eligible. That's what the portal opening and closing signifies. You also have the next transfer and be eligible area happens in December. I think it starts, what, December 4th or something like that this year, Jerry? They're reconfiguring right now. Another thing that came out of those meetings, and I mentioned this earlier about the meetings with where NIL might come in-house and some of those topics and players getting paid for their NIL as it relates to TV revenue. Another thing that came out of that meeting is they're trying to reconfigure recruiting and the timeline for recruiting. One of the proposals now apparently that's gaining some steam, and it won't happen for 2024, that's gaining some steam, is making July a completely dead month. So no official visits, no visits on campus, just completely dead, so that coaches actually have a little bit of time off. Players that want to make decisions can do it in June and then start again once football season starts up. So that's another piece to look for. But as far as the portal itself right now, next window is in December.
And I guess the one caveat is grad transfers, right, Bobby? If somebody graduates in May, they could jump in conceivably.
Well, they are. Yes, they can and they can play as long as it's not within conference in the SEC.
Right.
But that's a different category of sorts. No. They're not actually portal transfers.
Right. Right.
They're just transfers. Yeah.
Okay, guys, before we move on, Bobby, I'm going to let you tell folks out there about the Carrot Concierge and how they can help these folks with Mother's Day.
Yeah, I got to be honest, you guys. Mother's Day is coming up. It's May 12th. That's a week and a half away. It sneaks up on me each and every year. So with Mother's Day coming up, you may be like me, looking for the right gift for the woman in your life. That's my wife. I make sure to take care of her. And I did that this year with the carrotconcierge.com. Jody Reynolds is a personal jeweler. She is the Carrot Concierge. You can see some of her beautiful creations here. Use the QR code on the screen to see even more, or visit her on Instagram or her website, thecarrotconcierge.com. Jody's an Austin resident, a Texas fan. She and her family listen to On Texas Football, as a matter of fact. And she prides herself in providing personal service. A personal jeweler is a little bit different. You can definitely save money as much as 30% off because there is no storefront that they have to pay for rent. Also, she can work and get you specifically ordered pieces of jewelry. Give her a call, text her, or just go to her website as well. Jody has a number of different bracelets, rings, necklaces, more. All beautiful jewelry, all personalized for you and yours. Check out that carrotconcierge.com for this Mother's Day. Visit her website or give her a call and take care of that special someone in your life. Hey, even if you don't do it with the Carrot Concierge, make your life better. Take care of that special someone on Mother's Day, guys.
Right around the corner.
It really is. Yep, people don't get it. People don't get it, but it's true. I used to worry about it basically on the Thursday or Friday before Mother's Day. Now I do a little bit more. As you get older, you realize, maybe I should do a little bit more.
All right. We got a super chat here from Jack. And Jack, no stranger to the super chats. We appreciate it as always. He says, I loved Rod and CJ yesterday evening. He's now officially Papers Babers.
That's hilarious.
And then our next question, guys, comes from Nathan Duck. We've actually had a couple of questions regarding this week. We just haven't been able to get to them. He says, hey, Bobby and Jerry, I haven't heard anything about Xavier Filsimi lately. When do you guys think he will play? Do you think it'll be this year, or do you feel like he will redshirt?
I don't see a redshirt. I definitely think he'll play this year, special teams, get in some games. Look, I think one of the things we talked about is, and Steve Sarkisian said this, his February press conference is, the need for depth has never been more important than now, moving to a 12-team playoff. If you're one of those programs that has those expectations, those aspirations, you have to really continue to build that depth throughout the season, especially considering one loss doesn't derail a season anymore. I think you're going to see Texas continue to build out that depth. I think you're going to see them rotate just as much defensively, if not a little bit more, in some games this year. And I think these young guys, they're going to look to develop them earlier in the seasons, Bobby.
I agree about getting guys on the field. The other thing that I would say is the better these young players are, the more likely they don't have the drop-off that Texas used to have when it played freshmen. So there's a little bit of difference in that. I thought Sark has done a tremendous job last year and the year before of getting young players on the field via special teams. So whether it was Jelani McDonald last year or Trey Wisner or Leonga LaFau, think of all those guys. They all made plays on special teams. Texas has done, and Sark has done a good job of getting them acclimated to the speed of the college game, as well as performing on a big stage via special teams. I think he'll continue to do the same this year.
Odin Horns has a good question there, Blake.
Oh, yeah. He says, Arkansas and Kentucky's 2024 teams. What are your thoughts?
So Arkansas, who knows, right? I mean, I think that they're in a little trouble up there. Kentucky's interesting because they're going to run the ball effectively. Now, they lost some key guys. They had quarterback drafted for the second straight year who was a transfer quarterback. Running back went in the draft. Linebacker went in the draft. They lost some key parts of that. The D-tackle, Deion Walker, it could be a first-rounder. He'll be about as good as Texas faces. The Michigan guys plus Deion Walker up the interior of a defense. He's a really good player. He could be a first-rounder. He'd be a load. But, you know, look, Mark Stoops has always done a good job evaluating kids, especially in that southern part of Ohio, battling in, you know, for some gyms in South Georgia, let's say, more than Atlanta, going to areas they know they can evaluate and win. They're always, I think, going to be a competitive, tough out. Now, they've struggled with Georgia because Georgia overwhelms them and they can't run the ball against Georgia. If you can take away Kentucky's run game, then it's tougher. Now, Berrien Brown is going to be one of the most explosive receivers in the country, will be one of the best Texas plays next year, could be the most talented Texas plays next year. Honestly, Eugene Wilson from Florida will be the most talented slot receiver Texas faces. But I think Kentucky's going to be a much better team than Arkansas, Bobby. But, you know, again, if you stop the run against Kentucky, they think they got a number two receiver out of the portal. We'll see. That's been an area that they've struggled with. But Kentucky will be competitive under Stoops, no doubt.
I think that Arkansas, to your point, Jerry, is very, how do I want to say this, discombobulated right now. They have the look of a team that's likely going to go get Gus Malzahn to be their next head coach next year.
Yep.
Mark Stoops is in a uniquely situated predicament as well. He got left at the altar by A&M.
Yeah.
And he's been the best coach at Kentucky in the last 50 years, probably since Bear Bryant left them, right? Okay, he's been their best coach. The problem is now he's had eyes for another woman, right? And so what are you going to do with this guy that's 8-4, went and, you know, tried to break up a marriage, then got jilted and went back to his wife? He's going to have some pressure on him this year that he it's self-inflicted.
Yeah.
But I'm telling you, there's going to be some pressure on him. I think that, to your point, Jerry, they have some explosive playmakers. Berrien Brown is one of them. Will they be able to get him the ball? The thing with Mark Stoops that has been his hallmark is he plays good defense, and he has good defensive players. They have speed. They build them up. All of that stuff. He has good defenses. Texas is going to need to score 21 to 28 points. You know, and that they should be able to do that. We'll see. We'll see how Kentucky takes this season, in my opinion, because Mark Stoops is in really an odd situation, in my opinion.
Very odd. Yeah, I mean, look, he was on the tarmac in College Station.
Oh, man. Okay. Next question here from Mark Valdez. He says, if you could choose one other state for Sark and company to completely dominate in recruiting for the next few years, which state would you choose? Florida, Georgia, California?
So I want to go realistic. As long as Kirby's at Georgia and they're doing well, that's not going to be realistic. So I'm going to take that one out of the equation. I mean, you can battle. You can occasionally get some good players there. Clemson did, but they're 2 hours away, 2.5 hours away, right? I think Florida's a big state. Especially the key in Florida is if – let's see what Cristobal does this year. They got an unbelievably easy schedule if they beat Florida. Florida – see what happens there. Is FSU going to continue with the quarterback transfer they got? I think they're going to have a drop off. So the state of Florida may not have it's easier to go in there. They have more players, obviously. It's easier to go in there right now in those corridors, whether it's Jacksonville, Tampa, Orlando, and do a good job evaluating recruiting and pluck two or three guys a year. They have over 250 Division I players a year. They have some really good players. They led the NFL draft in draft picks. Even IMG had two, but you take those away. Florida still had the most draft picks out of that state this year that played high school football. But if you combine Texas and Florida, if you pull three, four guys from Florida every year, I think you're in business. Georgia's in Atlanta's tough sledding right now. South Georgia's a lot of gyms. You can go evaluate those guys. But if you're asking for where if you put resources, and by resources, I mean trips to these states, time spent, boots on the ground, all the money, the flights, everything that goes into it, I think you're going to get more returns out of Florida than Georgia right now.
I don't disagree, but I would add this to it, okay? If I had to choose one of them to dominate, it would probably be Georgia. And hear me out. In Texas, we have enough skill position talent, in my opinion. Okay. We don't have enough linemen always. Okay. Georgia right now is producing more high quality defensive linemen than maybe, and offensive linemen combined, both, than Florida. Doesn't mean that Florida, obviously, they got, whether it's Brandon Brown or Myron Charles or whoever, Jerry, they've got guys. I'm not saying that, but it mixes better. That talent mixes better with what Texas is also good at, the state of Texas, in my opinion. But the great thing about it is Texas doesn't have to choose. They can hunt and pick and still have Texas as the base. That's what Ohio State's done, guys. I'll just be honest. I mean, Ohio State's treated Ohio as its base and hunted and pecked Texas, Florida, California, and the East Coast.
Yeah,
that's what they've done, and it's worked pretty well for them.
All right, y'all, we've had a lot of people join since we first started, so obviously we're getting a lot of Dominic Williams questions coming back in. We're going to talk about that and reset, but we also have a super chat that I'm going to lead into that with from John Center. Thank you, John. And John asked, where does Williams go, OU or Texas? Put in your vote. Call your shot. What you got?
Jerry, you're the recruiting guy. You get to go first, buddy.
Well, look, my answer is whoever thinks the juice is worth the squeeze.
Interesting. I think that my take on it has been somewhat similar to what Jerry's is. There's a lot of talk behind the scenes that, oh, well, the mom apparently likes OU or something like that. I don't know. I mean, look, I think Texas is recruiting him as hard as they can possibly recruit him. They're going to go down swinging. We'll see where it goes. I don't think it's going to be LSU. So I think it's going to be a Red River rivalry here at the last minute. It's our understanding that some representatives of Williams meeting with OU today. Texas met with him yesterday for approximately two and a half hours. So after his post LSU visit. So clearly, I'm just telling you guys, clearly this is a big, big moment for Texas and what they're recruiting in the offseason or this spring with portal recruiting.
And another thing that we talked about was some of the NCAA possible changes coming up. We have a super chat regarding that. Rhett says, and thank you, by the way, Rhett, Assistant Athletic Director Plonsky spoke in NIL class with large concern that if the profitable football and men's basketball go into revenue sharing, that the other sports might get wiped out.
It's the whole idea of it hurting potentially Olympic sports. I mean, I get it, but here's the reality of that. Deal with it. And I say that on the most base of levels, right? Chris Blonsky is bright, and she knows what she's talking about. The reality of it is, though, Texas is going to still scholarship its athletes. They're not going to stop scholarshipping and supporting Olympic sports. They just may not get the funding for the elite facilities they did before. But they're not going to stop funding women's soccer. They're just not. And so I think that she's right in some ways. In other ways, it's not all or nothing. There's going to be a happy median at some level. Because it is going to take, to be fair, it's going to, if they give revenue sharing and say it's 25% to players, I mean, on a $75 million contract, that's going to be $20 million off of Chris Del Conte's budget, just lopped off. That's a cool penny.
Yes. Marco Mendez says alumni band day is September 21st against Louisiana Monroe. Everyone show up and cheer us on and hook them.
I love that. I love little announcements like that, man. That's what it's all. What grabs me about comments like that, Jerry, and I'm going to go off for 1 minute here, so please bear with me. Everybody is a fan of Texas in different ways, and how you glom onto it or become it. I mean, it could be through a fraternity. It could be through your group on your floor at Texas. It could be through your grandpa that listened to games on the radio with you. There are 100 ways you can be a fan of the University of Texas. And I think the one thing I want to always push here is I want this to be the place where everybody can kind of come together and coalesce and be a place where everybody feels welcome. That's a Longhorn fan, no matter how you got there or what you love. And so love it, Marco. I can't play a freaking musical instrument to save my neck. I'm like tone deaf. So more power to you.
All right, guys, let's take some more questions here. Ran Rodriguez says, do you guys think they'll ever go up to a 95-man roster with all these extra added games?
I could see 90, Bobby. I know about 95.
It used to be 95. It was 105.
Yeah.
Back in the 70s, I think. I actually can see them going up as high as they want to. Greg Sankey, the SEC commissioner, actually said, why do we have any scholarship limits? Why not just let people have whatever they want to do on an individual institutional basis or a league by league basis? I don't think 95 is necessary, though, to Jerry's point. I mean, the NFL gets away with 53. Now, the NFL also doesn't have to worry about playing freshmen and having 25 freshmen on the roster that may or may not be ready for the rigors of college football immediately. So there's a level there, but I can see it being, you know, whatever you want it to be. Right now, the limit actually is 105, by the way. 85 scholarship, 20 walk-ons.
Yeah.
And our next question, fellas, comes from Michael Sproul. He says, now with 12 teams in the playoffs, how many more years do you think the conference championship games will last?
It's a great question. I think it's done when it goes to 16 for sure. But like Bobby said, it's all about the money. But I think when the playoffs go to 16, the conference championship's done. Game done.
Money. You think the SEC is going to give up the game in Atlanta?
If they get two more teams in the playoffs, yeah.
If they get 6 of 16, is that what they're going to ask for? I mean, look. I mean, seriously, yeah. They may ask for 5 to 6 teams in a 16-team playoff.
100%. 100%. I think the Big Ten and SEC will get 10 teams in a 16-team playoff.
Wow.
That's what I think is going to eventually happen. I could be wrong. But I think at that level, at that point, I think the conference championship game goes away because you're adding another game to the season at that point. And look, I mean, you can't play an NFL season.
Let me ask you this. If you were the college football czar and you had, you know, they're trying, a bunch of people are trying to create these minor leagues of sorts. If you're Toledo or Akron or, I don't know, Southwest Texas, why wouldn't you create a springtime league instead of playing in the fall?
Look, there's
I would watch.
Yes.
Southwest Tech. I know it's no longer Southwest Texas. I would watch Texas State right now instead of baseball and basketball. Move that sport to springtime. And then also it could be a true minor league ramp up. Those guys could play in the spring and then transfer in the fall to a bigger program. It would be a better feeder system for everybody.
I think that's where it's headed long term. There's a head coach at the G5 level that brought up that idea 2 years ago when all this stuff really kicked into high gear, said that's what needs to happen. There needs to be a spring league. Essentially, and he's calling it what it is. We're minor league baseball of sorts, and we have our league. We play for our own national championship. And you know what? The Power Four schools they're evaluating our guys anyways. So have a portal window open after that. And the portal window for the same guys coming down from P4 to our league. And just go play it out. Have that spring league national champion. Like you said, Bobby, I think a lot of people would watch it, especially considering there's guys that would be at their future Power Four schools, and it's football. I think that's where things are headed long term. I'll be surprised if we don't end up in a 16-team playoff and a spring league for the G5s. I don't know what year that's happening. I think that's where all this is headed to. Two Power Four.
I would watch football in the spring. We don't have football in the spring right now. And the XFL just doesn't do it for you because they're ultimately not making it football.
Yeah.
They're trying to be entertainment as opposed to football.
We have a super chat here from UT Boy. Thank you, UT Boy, for the super chat. He says, it doesn't matter who OU get. Sark has the certified powerhouse being built. One word comes to mind, woodshed. And I am UT Boy. I approve of this message.
Well, I think it does matter who Texas gets. I will say that I will be surprised if Sark doesn't have something special, a little bit more special planned for OU next year. I think that one's stuck in his craw a little bit based on some internal discussions I've heard. That did not sit well. That loss did not sit well with him, whether it was some early play calls, et cetera, or how players reacted, et cetera. I think that one kind of got him. A little bit. And on defense, too. Not just offense. Defense, too.
Gary Rose, I don't know. You asked a question, but get a little more specific on that.
Yes, let us know. We'll circle back. But first, guys, let's talk about the Aggies. We got a couple of questions there. Always a fun topic for Longhorn fans. And Odin Horns says, how do we stack up versus the Aggies in 2024 under Elko? He says Texas is a 4-point favorite. He thinks. I was just looking. I haven't found an early line on that game yet. There's one for Michigan and Georgia, but I haven't seen one for A&M. But what do y'all think?
What are the lines on Michigan and Georgia? Did you see it?
Actually, there's three lines. So Texas is a 1.5-point dog against Georgia. They're a 9.5-point favorite against Oklahoma. And a 3.5-point favorite against Michigan.
Okay, that line's gone up from 2.5 to 3.5 with Michigan.
3.5, Jerry, against the defending national champions.
Yeah,
I think that tells you how some people feel.
Yeah,
They're going to have a good defense, Jerry. Aggie's going to have a good defense under Elko. I don't have any doubt about that.
Yeah,
the question will be whether or not. They can actually put together an offense that doesn't look like it's running in mud.
Yeah. So, look, it's always health at the end of the season, these games that play a big factor. But I want to say it specifically for A&M because I think Texas has a lot more depth right now that's been built as Texas should have more depth than A&M right now. I think there's two big things for me with A&M this year. Can Weigman stay healthy at quarterback? One, because he's – had health issues dating back to high school, whether it's concussions or what happened last year with the talus bone. Then it's the offensive line. Chase Besantes is not a tackle. What is that offensive line going to look like this year? How healthy is that offensive line going to be by the end of the year? That's really going to be the key for A&M, I think, offensively, is what does the offensive line look like and how healthy are they at the end of the year? Because they obviously they don't have the depth they want or need. Chase Besantes is not a tackle last year. They put him in a position to fail. He's a good guard, but he is not a tackle. So what is that offensive line going to look like this year? And how healthy they're going to be at the end of the year. I think that's going to be not just the Texas game. I think that's going to be huge for A&M season. Can Weigman stay healthy? And what does that offensive line look like? Because they will be good on defense. Their defense will keep them in games.
All right, guys. And
then, be unlike Kentucky. They won't be unlike Kentucky in that regard, Jerry. Very similar teams. Defense first. Try to play tight games. Kentucky, though, may have that one X factor at wide receiver with Berry and Brown. I think that A&M overall is more talented than Kentucky, though.
We have another A&M question and a super chat regarding A&M as well. We'll start with the Odin Horn says, kind of continuing on his last question, he said, Thanksgiving weekend, is it the best stadium atmosphere in the 2024 college football season?
I'm going to say this. I think it's going to be the loudest stadium of the season in college football. There is a lot of – it hadn't been played in over a decade. There's going to be hellacious vitriol coming all season long, especially if Texas has the type of season that is projected. Because if Texas goes into A&M as a college football playoff team and A&M is not – boy, you want to talk, there's Super Bowls and then there's Super Bowls. And that is going to be the Super Bowl for the Aggies. There's no doubt that is going to be a very, very loud stadium, taking everything into account, Bobby.
I think it'll be very loud unless A&M's 4-8.
Yeah.
And half their fans don't show up.
Yeah. True. That I think they had 4,000 at the spring game. Hey, Billy Lucci's had get-togethers with more than that. Jeez. I guess the weather was too bad for the greatest fan base in college football to come out.
Hey, I want to add this. I agree with your comment, Jerry, that on the surface, if I were betting right now, it will be one of the loudest, if not the loudest, games in the country this year. I mean, 13 years since Texas has played the Aggies. I think it's a whole decade and a half of young people in the state of Texas missed out on a rivalry, in my opinion. They don't even know what it's like to have your next door neighbor come over and taunt you, or for your little cousin that goes to A&M come over and talk crap, or vice versa, you being able to go to the, family reunion and just kind of laugh at the Aggies. It's all in good fun, but that's part of what growing up in Texas was.
And that game, whether it's at A&M or Texas, the first year obviously at A&M, it's going to be so impressive to young recruits, to your point, Bobby, the young kids who they have no idea what that game was like from a recruiting standpoint. And now they're going to find out. And I think that's really hurt in-state recruiting, keeping some kids in-state over the last decade plus. That game is very valuable for recruiting for both teams in the state of Texas and the fight to keep more kids home.
And then we have that super chat that I was talking about from UT Boy once again. Thank you again, UT Boy. He says that Texas A&M won't cross the 50 against us. Hide and watch. No offense in the back. No backfield. No O-line. I'm putting 10 large on it. Hook 'em.
Reuben Owens is a pretty good running back, guys. Ruben Owens is a pretty good running back now.
Look, I hope UT Boy's right. That'll move it up to a $15 super chat if he wins $10K on that game. Any plan to get Paul Feinbaum back on the show? Sure, absolutely. Paul's got to give another hook'em this season.
I texted with Paul earlier this week. I'll see him probably later this month in person. But I love Paul. I love a lot of what we get out of the SEC. And talking about this rivalry is part of what's bringing that about. We're also talking about OU with Dominic Williams right now. Texas is going to have it all, rekindling the Arkansas rivalry in Fayetteville. If you've never been to Arkansas for a football game when Texas is playing, you're in for a little treat there.
Hey, you'll probably have John Calipari dancing on the field before the game, and he'll fire it. He'll help fire it up even more. He'll have something to say. Now you got that one man marketing show in basketball. Oh, he'll get everybody even more fired up for that game. He'll say something. I went into Dallas and got Julius Randle from Texas. Blah. He's gonna say something. He's gonna fire up people. I guarantee you.
Oh man! All right. Bobby, can you tell folks out there about Rick Vavro and Austin Underground?
Yeah, absolutely. Our friend Rick Vavro and his team at Austin Underground have specialized in difficult underground commercial installations since 2004. The team's engineering background gives Austin Underground the ability to perform work other firms often consider too risky. Rick and his team offer end-to-end client experience, including seamless communication, budgeting, staffing, and top-notch trade partners. And most importantly, they produce solid quality work each and every time. That's Austin Underground. You guys see those big buildings going up in downtown Austin? What's going on underground sometimes is Austin Underground. Give those guys a shout if you need help. Again, Austin Underground, Rick Vavro and his team, we appreciate their sponsorship of every Thursday morning's Coffee and Football.
Okay, guys, time for some more questions here. We got just a little bit. But first, I want to ask y'all, you know, we talked about those early lines, and they also have early over and under. So for Michigan, for example, the Michigan game, they have 49.5 points. Do you think there will be 50-ish points scored in that game?
Well, not based on the Michigan spring game. I mean,
Michigan's going to have to score some defensive touchdowns or special teams or get short fields.
Now, Michigan's defense, very good. I think they have they don't just have the two frontline D-line guys that everybody talks about, Mason Graham and Kenneth Grant. I'm telling you, a kid like Trey Pierce, who was a freshman last year, they got depth on that defensive line. They got some really good players on that defensive line. Obviously, Will Johnson, you hope if you're Michigan, he can take somebody away. They're going to be tougher to score on. For sure, they may have the best defensive front Texas plays all year, and that's saying something because Georgia and A&M are pretty good.
I can see a game. I can see a score, Jerry, like 21-13 in that game, 17-10.
And Michigan will try to take the air out of the ball in that game.
Yeah, absolutely. They will run the. They will. Yes, great point.
All right, so then Oklahoma, the Red River Shootout rivalry, whatever you want to call it, 60.5. Points. What do you think about that one?
Woo. Man, that is a shootout. You can call it a shootout if you want to. I would take the over on that if I'm sitting here right now. The only thing you got to remember, Seth Luttrell is the new coordinator there for the Sooners. New quarterback in Jackson Arnold.
That's
the I don't think it's going to be 49-0 because Davis Bevel's not taking a snap.
Right.
I would probably take the over on that right now.
I think the question for OU offensively, look, Dylan Gabriel made about every clutch play you could make in that game last year. Now, he didn't against Kansas because small hands came into play in cold, rainy weather. Remember that, Oregon fans. But is Jackson Arnold going to deliver like Dylan Gabriel did at the right time on the right downs in that game? That'll be big for Oklahoma, how many points they're going to score in that game. I mean, Dylan Gabriel, every play that needed to be made, he made in that game. Whether Texas helped him or not, he made the play. Is Jackson Arnold going to make those same plays?
And then finally, guys, Georgia and Texas, they have it as 55.5 points scored.
So more than the Michigan game. That's a road game, Georgia at Texas, obviously. That'll be a College game day game. I would take the little bit of the under on that. I could see it. I could see it being, you know, I could see it being 31-20 type of game, 27-24 type of game. I would say a little under on that.
I don't know enough about so Georgia's got all other than Ladd McConkey, they've got Dominic Lovett and Rara Thomas coming back, right, at receiver, Jerry?
Yeah, and they got the transfer from Miami, who's damn good. Young. He's very good.
With that quarterback, the only question, they're going to have a new – they have – I guess it's the second year with the with offensive coordinator?
With Boba. Four offensive line starters back from the game against FSU, which you can't take much from that game, but the only guy they lost was Cedric Van Pran, the center that started the bowl game there. Lost both their running backs. Those guys weren't fast guys. They didn't even get drafted. I think their running backs are going to be a little better this year, a little bit more explosive, better all-around players. Oscar Delp at tight end is a future pro in my estimation. I mean, Georgia's defensive front's back almost intact. You know, they lost some key secondary guys. How their secondary, how they replace those guys is going to be big for Georgia's season next year to me. You know, Will Muschamp off the field this year for Georgia as well. So they've had a little bit of a they've had a little bit of a shakeup there. Georgia's a top two talented team in the country.
Yeah, no, I think Ohio State and Georgia are the odds-on favorites to win the national championship right now. You know, and so I would probably go under on that score of 54. I would go under right now.
Champ Bailey's talking about the sophomore from Converse Judson. He was 10-5 in high school, sophomore receiver at Georgia. He did run 10-5. He was fast.
And Mark wants to know, guys, the quarterback of the winner of the Georgia versus Texas game, do you think they will become the Heisman favorites?
Woo!
That depends on Quinn's game against Michigan early in the season and Carson Beck against Clemson. I mean, right out of the gate, they both have big games for the Heisman hype, right? Quinn had a great game against Bama last year. If he has a great game against this Michigan defense, yeah, he's going to vault. What does Beck do against Clemson? I mean, Mr. Anti-Portal, they're still considered a national program right now at Clemson, as they should be. But if Beck has a huge day against Clemson, that vaults you too. So, you know, I think they're obviously the two front runners, but somebody's going to creep up and creep in. I'm interested to see what Kalen DeBoer does with Jalen Milroe, if he can maximize everything he's got, because if he does more so than what Trevor Reese did, which he will, the question is to what level, then Milroe could make the most wild plays this year. But what kind of season is Alabama have? Are they going to be 9-3? Are they going to be 10-2? We'll see. But I think Jalen Milroe may make the most wild plays.
How much do they have left on defense? I mean, seriously, how much does – I know Nick Saban, he got cut into a little bit on defense late in his career. And now you have the Downs guy going to
Ohio State, who was the best freshman in college football last year.
I wonder if Alabama's the same. I think they're going to be fine on offense because that's what DeBoer does.
Right.
I think their question is,
to your point, Bobby, it's before Kirby went to Georgia, Nick could go in and get three or four really good players out of the state of Georgia and out of that Atlanta area. It got tougher. It got tougher once Clemson won national titles and when Kirby went to Georgia. That became a different recruiting. Now, they got Will Anderson. They're going to get their guys, but I'm not sure they got the depth of those guys out of Georgia like they did before Kirby got to Georgia. I'm talking about Nick Saban at Bama. So that definitely cut them a little bit. There's no doubt about it. Their defensive front at Bama wasn't as good in the late years as it was in the first 10 or 11.
What does their offensive line look like too, Jerry?
Yeah.
But, I mean, that wasn't exactly great shakes, and they lost a first-rounder.
Well, yeah, the key for them is the center that came in from Washington runs the system, right? I mean, so that's big. Obviously, Caden Proctor's coming back, so he'll be a second-year starter in college football now. I think they'll be all right on the offensive line. I think I watched a little bit of their video from their spring game. Their running backs are tremendous fits in Kalen DeBoer's scheme. I mean, Justice Hayes, Jamarian Miller, they're going to have good years in that scheme running the football.
Okay, y'all, we got to get out of here pretty soon. But first, I need to bring up a couple of things. The super chat, another super chat from UT Boy. He says he's urinating on that bonfire this year, wearing a shirt that reads, "This is for 99 and Major." Thank you once again, UT Boy, for the super chat. And then I wanted to bring this up real quick. Bobby, I know you were kind of discussing it before we came on here, but Lane Kiffin yesterday had tweeted this out. Josh Pate with his show on 24/7 Sports said, these are the college football things I hate I missed in person. Well, one of those things was USC Texas 2005. Lane obviously saw it, said, be careful what you wish for. I was there. He had a heartbreaking emoji. And then he says, can someone please tackle Superman? Those were my last words that day.
I'm glad no one did, because I was there that day, too. I was there that day, too. Hey, before we get out of here, we really need to talk about the news of the day one last time. Jerry, I know you've got text during the middle of this. I've gotten text during the middle of this about Dominic Williams, a defensive tackle out of TCU that is expected to make a decision today. Reset that and let everybody know exactly where that is, as well as other portal news. Whether it's Simeon Burrow, Javian Cole, et cetera.
Yeah, first off with Dominic Williams, it was originally going to be Wednesday a week ago. That didn't happen. Now it's today. Is it going to actually be today? Is it going to run the Friday? As of this morning, it's expected today at some point. We'll see. You know, it's already been bumped back a day. We kind of talked about that on OnTexasFootball.com. With Wednesday was what we originally heard, but it could be bumped in the later in the week, and that's exactly what's happened. We're talking about that last week. Dominic Williams got back from his visit from LSU, which he left about 2:30 or 3 yesterday, got back to Fort Worth, met with Texas last night for a couple hours. Now he's meeting with Oklahoma. That should be starting any time now. And does that decision come later today? Quite possibly. Does it bump back to Friday? We shall see. But as of right now, it's expected Thursday. 3 days ago, it was expected Wednesday. So let's just see what happens there. There's been a lot of discussion in the chat. I can tell you, I don't think that's going to be LSU. There's some people in the chat saying it's OU or LSU, Texas is out. I don't believe that. I believe Texas or Oklahoma is where the decision is going to come from. I don't think Oklahoma can keep up in the NIL sandbox that this game's being played in, just being real. So I think it'll be Texas or Oklahoma, and we'll see what happens there. Both people are swinging. The question is, does it get to a point where the juice is not worth the squeeze and all these portal recruitments? And we'll have to find out if that happens on either side. And then Simeon Barrow, the lineman out of Michigan State, that's going to go to Miami or LSU. I think Miami for the same reasons that Dominic Williams is going to be Texas or Oklahoma. I don't know if LSU can play in the sandbox with certain teams. It doesn't look that way to me. So that's that. Javion Cole, the corner, transfer portal corner from San Jose State, should be arriving in Austin today for a visit. I spoke with somebody who knows a San Jose State coach. Obviously, their head coach is now at Arizona, and they think that kid's a pro player. So I think Texas identified a tremendous corner, 10-6-7, 100-meter speed in high school, went from the Oakland Player of the Year to Cal Poly somehow, then the San Jose State. Now he's finally getting to the level he should be, which is power four, power five, whatever you want to call it. But Javion Cole, 5'11", 172, 175 in that range. He's got really good ball skills, a good knack for being around the football. He'll begin his visit to Texas today. Bobby put the news out yesterday. Sadir Mitchell staying at Texas. He did not go into the portal. So we reported that at OnTexasFootball.com yesterday. Could somebody else pop in today, Bobby? I mean, it's not out of the question.
Yeah, we have not heard yet of anybody else from Texas going in. And that, with 36 hours out, that's a good sign. If you want to keep up with the very latest news, we can't do videos all day long because we've got to actually go to work. Jerry's on the road today. Also for recruiting, I think he's meeting with KJ Lacy and that group over at Sarah Land later, the quarterback. Then he's on to Florida. If y'all want to get news and information behind the scenes on recruiting, news from the team, et cetera, make sure you become an OTF OG at OnTexasFootball.com. It's just $39.95 for an annual subscription. That's $20 off what the regular price is if you use the coupon code OTFOG at OnTexasFootball.com. Again, that's OnTexasFootball.com. Use the coupon code OTFOG. We'll have news and updates on Dominic Williams, Javion Cole, et cetera, throughout the day, as well as some recruiting news on the high school level, too. We do that each and every day. We already had three articles up before 7 a.m. or 7:30 a.m. this morning.
And by the way, come on TexasFootball.com. I have a on-the-road thread. I'll be out of the practice this afternoon. I'm going to be somewhere every day until next Friday on the road. I will tell you this. If you're wondering where I am, all I can tell you is I passed the home of Bubba Gump the other day, last night about 8 p.m. So that should give you a hint of where I'm at this morning is, Bayou La Batre. I was down past that exit last night. So hello to Bubba Gump.
All right, guys, we're gonna close with this last question here. Ski Break said, what's our regular season win over and under? It is right now 10.5 wins.
I would put it at 10. I would put it at 10 even.
I start at 10-2 and see what it looks like from there.
So you're both going under that 10.5 set by Vegas.
I would definitely go under if I were betting. Now, you know, I tend to be a little bit of a guy that not necessarily pessimist, but more realistic. I mean, Texas is going to go into the SEC. They were 10-2 this year in regular season, weren't they? So yeah. Now if you start counting conference championship games, it's a different story. You're gonna trip up from time to time. You just don't
look. I think it starts with the Michigan game. It's similar to last year with Alabama. If Texas, I started at 10-2 last year. If Texas beat Bama, I would adjust. Texas beat Bama, so that's an adjustment. I started at 10-2 this year. Tougher schedule. If Texas beats Michigan, looks good doing it. Unless Michigan's somehow a disaster. Unless the culture, everything just corrodes in a short amount of time, and they look like a team that's going the wrong direction in that game. But I think Texas, I'm starting at 10-2, and we'll go from there. And I say this, how many undefeated seasons did Nick Saban have at Alabama? It's hard, man. It's really hard in the SEC. So I'll say this, if we start at 10-2 every year, Texas is in a great spot in a 12-team, 14-team, and eventually 16-team playoff.
9-3 of the SECs, you're very possibly in the college football playoff, by the way.
Yeah.
Okay, guys. Well, that's gonna do it for today's episode of Coffee and Football, presented by Rick Vavro and Austin Underground. We want to thank them, along with the Carrot Concierge, for sponsoring today's show. Be sure to head on over to ontexasfootball.com for more continuous coverage of the Longhorns. Don't forget, use that promo code OTFOG. You can get an annual subscription for $39.95 for the year. You can't beat that. And if you haven't already, please hit that like and subscribe button. We would appreciate that. Ring the bell so you're notified anytime we go live or post a video. And that way you don't miss a thing. So for Bobby Burton and Jerry Hamilton, I'm Blake Monroe, and we'll see you tomorrow morning.
Be safe out there, Jerry.